Releasing an airborne virus underwater was admittedly unusual, and yet there were many life forms that incubated in liquid and then hatched into the air. Mosquitoes, mold spores, the bacterium that caused Legionnaires' disease, mycotoxins, red tide, even human beings. Sinsky grimly pictured the virus permeating the cistern's lagoon, and then the infected microdroplets rising into the damp air. Mirsat was now staring across a traffic-jammed street with a look of apprehension on his face. Sinsky followed his gaze to a squat, red-and-white brick building whose single door was open, revealing what looked to be a stairwell. A scattering of well-dressed people seemed to be waiting outside under umbrellas, while a doorman controlled the flow of guests who were descending the stairs. Some kind of underground dance club? Sinsky saw the gold lettering on the building and felt a sudden tightness in her chest. Unless this club was called the Cistern and had been built in AD 523, she realized why Mirsat was looking so concerned.
"The Sunken Palace," Mirsat stammered. "It seems there is a concert tonight."
Sinsky was incredulous.
"A concert in a cistern?"
"It's a large indoor space," he replied. "It's often used as a cultural center."
Bruder had apparently heard enough. He dashed toward the building, sidestepping his way through snarled traffic on Alemdar Avenue. Sinsky and the others broke into a run as well, close on the agent's heels. When they arrived at the cistern entrance, the doorway was blocked by a handful of concertgoers who were waiting to be let in. A trio of women in burqas, a pair of tourists holding hands, a man in a tuxedo. They were all clustered together in the doorway, trying to keep out of the rain. Sinsky could hear the melodic strains of a classical music composition lilting up from below. Berlioz, she guessed, from the idiosyncratic orchestration. But whatever it was, it felt out of place here in the streets of Istanbul. As they drew closer to the doorway, she felt a warm wind rushing up the stairs, billowing from deep inside the earth and escaping from the enclosed cavern. The wind brought to the surface not only the sound of violins, but the unmistakable sense of humidity and masses of people. It also brought to Sinsky a deep sense of foreboding. As a group of tourists emerged from the stairs, chatting happily as they exited the building, the doorman allowed the next group to descend. Bruder immediately moved to enter, but the doorman stopped him with a pleasant wave.
"One moment, sir. The cistern is at capacity. It should be less than a minute until another visitor exits. Thank you."
Bruder looked ready to force his way in, but Sinsky placed a hand on his shoulder and pulled him off to one side.
"Wait," she commanded. "Your team is on the way, and you can't search this place alone."
She motioned to the plaque on the wall beside the door.
"The cistern is enormous."
The informational plaque described a cathedral-sized subterranean room, nearly 2 football fields in length, with a ceiling spanning more than 100,000 square feet and supported by a forest of 336 marble columns. "Look at this," Langdon said, standing a few yards away. "You're not going to believe it." Sinsky turned. Langdon motioned to a concert poster on the wall.
"Oh, dear God."
The WHO director had been correct in identifying the style of the music as romantic, but the piece that was being performed had not been composed by Berlioz. It was by a different romantic composer, Franz Liszt.